Pour yourself a cold one.
Let's drink them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is daddy soda time. So pour yourself a cold one or crack a cold one open and get ready to hear the best podcast in the country as it relates to the NFL draft and breaking down these prospects. And it's the best one because our guy, Fran Duffy from the Eagles, puts in more time than just about anybody out there. There's a lot of great draft gurus. I happen to be biased towards Fran. I also am a huge believer in Mike Mayock from the NFL Network, who will join us in a little bit. He is today's interview. He's always excellent. Find out what Mike thinks of guys like Trubisky and Kaiser and Watson well in advance of April's draft. And you can hear that right here in a couple minutes on the College Draft Podcast. Fran, you are back from the Senior Bowl. You've been able to start to dive into some of these underclassmen. I probably should mention, Fran, I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, now just the host of a bunch of podcasts and all around media whore, I guess is probably a right word. I don't know. I got a bunch of gigs. Anyway, here's the deal. You've gotten into a bunch of underclassmen. We will get to the junior quarterbacks, including Patrick Mahomes, next week. But I want to get your thoughts on some of the other guys that you've had a chance to really dive into for the first time.
Yeah, a lot of the juniors I hadn't been able to really dive into from this past season until after the Senior Bowl, just because I'm spending so much time on the Shrine Game and Senior Bowl that I don't have time as much to really dive into some of the bigger names. So over the last week or so, I've really been able to get a closer look at guys like Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara from Tennessee, Elijah Hood. McCaffrey is a guy that, I mean, you check a lot of boxes with him, Ross. I mean, he's 6'2", 205. We'll see how heavy he is when he comes in at the combine, and that's going to be a big thing for him. Because when I look at him, I see him as a floor. I think he can be, you know, what Theo Riddick or what Danny Woodhead, a really viable piece to an NFL offense as a matchup guy out of the backfield. I think at least he's that. But what I wanted to see when I went back and watched him on tape was, could he be more? You know, could he be, you know, a quote-unquote number one feature type back? Now, he's not a foundation ball carrier. I don't know that he's ever going to be a guy that's going to be moving piles and you're going to give the ball to 20 times in a game, week in, week out in the NFL. I don't think he's that guy. But I think in an offense where, you know, maybe you're passing the ball more often than you're running, you know, you employ a lot of three receiver sets, four receiver sets. You like to spread the field out. You like to use the running back out of the backfield as a receiver. I think McCaffrey can definitely be a starting back in that kind of a scheme. And when I look at him, I see a former Eagle. You know, I see a guy like a Brian Westbrook, who was a great player here in Philadelphia, came out of Villanova, was a third-round pick, similar size. You know, he was listed just under 5'9", 200 pounds even. So that's why I am excited to see and anxious to see how McCaffrey measures in at Indianapolis. But McCaffrey really, really fascinates me with his skill set. I think he's got great vision. I love his quickness and his versatility as well. He could be a viable slot receiver in the NFL as well because of how good of a route runner he is and how natural he is at the catch point. But McCaffrey really, really fascinates me. You could say the same about Alvin Kamara, too, from Tennessee, and probably to a lesser extent. You know, Kamara only started 8 games in his career for the Volunteers. He's 5'10", 215 pounds, a little bit stockier than McCaffrey. Shares that receiving skill. You know, a really good athlete. He's explosive, maybe even a little bit more explosive straight line than McCaffrey is. But he's a good route runner. He was moved around the formation a little bit. Improved contact balance was the thing that really stood out to me watching Kamara this year compared to last year, his sophomore season in 2015, because he was able to run through more arm tackles. He was able to lower his shoulder and stay upright, running through contact, trying to make a guy miss and run through. I thought that he did a better job with that this past year as a junior. My big questions with him, number one, there are some off-field issues in his past at Alabama. He was named a captain this year. Every quote you find about Butch Jones when he talks about Alvin Kamara makes him seem like a Boy Scout. So every team is going to have to do their work and see which Alvin Kamara are we getting. Are we getting the guy that Butch Jones and the rest of the Tennessee staff glows over at Tennessee? Or are we getting the guy that was arrested a couple times and was kicked off the team at Alabama That's going to be the one question everyone's going to have to answer. But number two, I don't think he's got the vision that you'd want to be a foundation ball carrier inside between the tackles. I don't know that he's there yet, and I don't know that he's a quality pass protector yet to be that every down back. Now, could Kamara come in and play a role like a Tevin Coleman for the NFC champion Atlanta Falcons and be kind of that Robin to a Batman and be a great receiver and moved around the formation and you leverage his athleticism in the screen game and things like that? Absolutely. He's a great perimeter runner. When he's out in space, I think he's got a really natural ability to make people miss. I like everything Kamara brings to the table. I'm just not quite sure if he's that feature type back. Elijah Hood is kind of the opposite from North Carolina, 6 foot, 220, great inside ball carrier. You know, he's got really good vision in between the tackles. He's a violent runner. He's able to run through first contact. He's touched the ball a lot over the last couple of years. Kind of reminds me in some ways to an Alfred Morris, and wouldn't surprise me at all if he kind of followed that same career path. Because when I look at Hood, I don't look at him and say, man, he's definitely athletic enough to be an NFL ball carrier as a starter. But man, if he went to a zone scheme where, you know, they're not necessarily asking him to do too much from a burst or from a top end speed respect, and you don't need necessarily all that lateral movement, I think Hood could be that straight ahead downhill runner in an outside zone, inside zone stretch scheme to get downhill, be a factor between the tackles, and even turn into a potential starter. But that being said, I think ideally he's more of a change of pace, short yardage type player. He's an interesting player on top of that. And then the corners, three guys real quick: Marshawn Lattimore from Ohio State, Marlon Humphrey from Alabama, and Adoree Jackson from USC. Jackson was the only one of the three that I had studied coming into the year. And I think that he's a better player now than he was a year ago. You know, last year at this time, I said that he was probably a better athlete than he was a corner. And to a certain extent, I think you could still say that. But I do think he took steps in the right direction this year. He was used a little bit less on offense this year, and I think that kind of helped him. He was able to focus more on his responsibilities as a corner. And I think he got better in a lot of the little things. You know, playing in press coverage. Everyone remembers that play where he got burned by John Ross at the line of scrimmage for a deep touchdown. But he made some really impressive plays in that Washington game in zone coverage where he's reading route concepts and making plays on the ball early. I think Jackson shows a lot of skills that you really want from a shutdown corner. The question will be his size. I'm interested to see how he measures in at the combine, but he's a great athlete. Marlon Humphrey from Alabama, got a chance to watch him. Really intriguing player. 6'1", just under 200 pounds. He's got good size. He's one of the most competitive corners I've ever watched. Guy just is relentless as a run defender. Really violent player. Wants to come down and knock your block off as a run defender. And really, the other big thing is his speed. I mean, he's got great straight line speed. The question with him is just finding the ball consistently down the field. There were a couple times when I watched him where he lost the ball on those contested situations, trying to find the ball, getting back in phase. He's got all the physical skills you want, but you want him to be able to find the ball a little bit more consistently. That's something I want to continue to see more of as I watch more of Humphrey. And then Lattimore is really interesting, a one-year starter, press man corner. I think he's got as a natural at the line of scrimmage. I think he's got all the physical traits to be a quality starter on the outside. I do wish he was a little bit of a better run defender, but I think he's a natural press man guy. If healthy, should start for a long time. And that's notable because he did have a lot of issues with, I believe it was a hamstring injury over the course of his first two seasons in Columbus. So all three guys, really talented corners. I'm excited to continue to dig into more of these underclassmen.
Speaking of Ohio State and speaking of underclassmen and speaking of injuries, been a bad week since last week. Corey Davis, Malik Hooker, Jared Davis. News came out for all those guys that they are injured, will not participate in the combine. I think maybe the most noteworthy was the two surgeries for Malik Hooker. You know, the one was a core muscle surgery, but the other one, they said it was a torn labrum. I haven't found out yet if that was in his hip or in his shoulder, because that makes a difference. I don't know if maybe you have more information there, Fran.
No, I haven't heard gotten the clarification on that either, and I thought the same thing that you did when I heard the labrum. You know, it obviously is unfortunate with all three guys. You know, you wanted to see Corey Davis there and see how he stacks up athletically with Mike Williams and kind of compare that from an apples-to-apples standpoint. You know, the combine and the drills and everything and the athletic testing, it's a piece of the puzzle, but it's just another piece that you can use in the evaluation to kind of stack these guys And so not seeing Corey Davis work out, not seeing Jared Davis, who I would have expected to be one of the most impressive athletes at the linebacker position, not being able to see him work out. Malik Hooker, we know how athletic he is as a safety. Not getting a chance to see him work out. It is unfortunate. That being said, all three guys, especially Davis and Hooker, have great tape. So they're going to rely on that moving forward. And it's just unfortunate for all three guys. I would say of the three, the guy that maybe hurts the most, I want to say probably Davis. You know, and it's a shame because he didn't go to the Senior Bowl because he was preparing for the Combine. So he didn't get a chance to set himself apart down there. And now he's going to miss the Combine. So two chances that he had to kind of set himself apart from guys like Mike Williams or John Ross or Juju Smith or any of these guys that could be considered as one of the top receivers. I think Corey Davis's tape is better than all of them. But now he's given the door is open now for one of these other guys to stand out.
Lastly, quickly, Fran, there's a new rule in the NFL that they can not have you come to the combine if you've got a spotty track record. And as a result, Oklahoma running back Joe Mixon, Baylor wide receiver Ishmael Zamora are not on the combine invite list. Seems kind of counterintuitive to me because I'm guessing all those teams really want to talk to those guys. I don't really understand that. I guess they're trying to dissuade guys from getting in trouble, but I think those guys already are dissuaded from getting in trouble.
Yeah, the similarity between both is that there was video of both guys. You know, Zamora, there was video of him with, I believe it was his dog. It was a Snapchat video, and that was one of the reasons for his suspension. And then you also had Mixon, and we all know about his video with his domestic violence issue as well. So with both guys, it's unfortunate. I mean, look, it's part of the rules now. They'll have to meet with teams and kind of do those interviews in a separate forum. But I like you said, it's interesting. And there are some other guys that were left off the list from a talent standpoint. But it's interesting that some guys, it's not like everybody that's at the combine has a squeaky clean record. So the similarity between both Mixon and Zamora is definitely the video evidence.
Well, speaking of the video, Mike Mayock crushes it like nobody else. He is today's best available interview.
Best available interview.
So, Mike, before we ask you about this year's group of quarterbacks, I did want to ask, because, you know, if I'm a listener right now, I'm thinking, okay, well, we're going to ask a draft expert about this year's quarterbacks, but a lot of the draft experts last year said Jared Goff was the best one and had Dak Prescott down the line in terms of their ranking. So obviously we know the Cowboys are more talented and he had a better offensive line and all that. But even from the preseason, when you watched Goff, it was a little bit dubious and you started to scratch your head and it didn't really look like he knew what was going on. And you watched Dak Prescott and almost right away, Mike, he looked really comfortable. So what happens there? What did so many people miss as it relates to those two guys? I know it's early for both of them, by the way, but just in terms of how they played as rookies.
Well, I think it's an interesting conversation, and you can probably throw Carson Wentz in there because, you know, he threw the ball 612 times for a Division I AA team, and I think a lot of people questioned him going that high also. So I think all three of them are a fantastic conversation as it relates to the number one overall pick in the draft. I looked at him last year and said, okay, he has 1,000 more throws in the pocket than Wentz did. But he comes out of a style and a system where he's never been in a huddle. He's never had to call a play. He has very minimal pass protection responsibilities. And they're all things that take a little time to learn if you've never spit out a play in your life. And Carson Wentz came out of a pro style. That was easy for him. Dak Prescott, you know, I look back at my notes when he started playing well in the preseason last year to see what I had to say about him. And he had, I believe it was a second, and I can't remember perfectly, but I think it was a second DUI right around the Senior Bowl or between the Senior Bowl and the draft. And I think it scared some people off a little bit. He was a really good kid, but he had an issue there. And I think that hurt him a little bit. I looked at Dak Prescott, Ross, and the first two tapes I watched were Alabama and Ole Miss, and his front was completely overwhelmed by the defensive front. He didn't have a chance. And then you watch him in the bowl game against Jacoby Brissett, North Carolina State. And it was like, wow, this is pretty good. Both of them were big, strong kids, threw the football down the field, athletic enough to create time. They both were pretty accurate. But if you ask me if I saw Dak Prescott doing what he did last year so quickly, you know, no way. I'd be the first to put my hand up and say I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, then, Mike, before we get into these guys this year, I guess I just want you to talk about the group in general, because it doesn't sound like the league, based on all the reports I've seen, is really all that excited about this year's crop of quarterbacks. How do you see them?
In a similar fashion. There's not one quarterback in this draft that today on February, whatever it is, that I would bang the table and say is a top 10 pick and a lock type franchise quarterback. And last year we had at least two, in my opinion, but certainly Wentz. So I'm not excited about the top three because each of them have different question marks. And then beyond that, there's no real great depth either. So if I'm a Cleveland Brown fan and I passed on Carson Wentz a year ago, and I'm coming back with the first and 12th pick in the draft this year, and I need a quarterback, I'd be a little frustrated.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's kind of weird, Mike, when you think about, you know, the proliferation of flag football, 7-on-7, as much as these guys are throwing the ball in college, isn't it kind of weird that there's nobody really that stands out like that? I mean, it doesn't seem like that happens very often, and you'd think with as much as the passing game and Elite 11 and all the things, the quarterback gurus, it's kind of bizarre that there isn't really a guy like that or even a couple guys like that.
I'm with you, and I look at it like I look at the NBA draft every year. And in the NBA, people tell me that, you know, if you don't go in the first few picks, you're not any good. And I'm like, there's millions of great basketball players in this country. And like second-round picks in the NBA are nothing these days. And how can there not be a bunch of great basketball players coming out to play basketball? And I look at this draft this year, and I don't have an answer for you other than there's some kids with talent. I mean, there's another kid coming out of the University of California this year. Last year we had Goff. You know, this year Davis Webb was just the MVP of the Senior Bowl, which is what Prescott was a year ago. And Davis Webb has a good arm, quick release. He's 6'4", 230. I kind of like Davis Webb, but my gut tells me he's going to have a very similar learning curve that Goff did coming out of that offense.
It sounds like right now, Mike, or at least, I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like a lot of people have Mitch Trubisky from North Carolina as maybe the top guy, a guy that a lot of us, myself included, I never even heard of till he started playing this year. What do you see when you see Trubisky and put the tape in?
He's a one-year starter, 8-5 record. If he is so talented and gifted and a top 10 type pick, one of the original questions a lot of teams are asking is why couldn't he beat out Marquise Williams the last couple of years at North Carolina? You know, what's the answer to that one? I look at him on tape, and the tape is pretty good. I mean, he's not afraid of tight windows. He has good ball location. He works the pocket pretty well, and that's a biggie. That's what Carson Wentz did really well in college, and what a lot of kids don't do is have good pocket mechanics and an understanding of how to slide and move. And he has a pretty good feel for that. He's got a quick release and a strong arm. He made some mistakes in games late in the game. Duke threw an interception late that was a bad interception. And now you can pick apart anybody's game, and I'm trying not to do that. But the one-year starter thing bothers me a lot when it comes to a quarterback, especially when you're talking about a top 10 type of pick. All three of these top-level quarterbacks, to me, I would be scared to death in the top 10.
Mike, you talked about the great flashes you see with Trubisky and some of the positive traits that he shows on film. You see a lot of similarities with DeShone Kizer, and there was a point probably late September, mid-October, where he was kind of the chic pick to go in the top two, top three, ahead of a guy like DeShone Watson. What have you seen from Kizer? What are some of his flaws that kind of keep him from being a lock for that top 10 status?
He's got everything you want physically. He's got size, arm strength, athletic, smart kid, understands the game, I think, in the big picture. Good work ethic, never been in trouble. So if you took a snapshot of him, you go, that's a franchise quarterback. The problem I have is that his pocket mechanics seem to break down at the worst times. And he got removed in the fourth quarter from two or three games this past year. He got replaced at Stanford. He got replaced at UFC. I've watched five of his games so far. And in almost every game at critical times, the pocket mechanics, the feel in the pocket, what decisions you're making with the football seem to break down when his team needs him the most. And there needs to be a better consistency from him from first quarter to fourth quarter and from game to game. I think he's got the highest ceiling of these three quarterbacks we're talking about. But he hasn't been able to do it on a consistent basis yet.
So then the next guy, obviously, Mike, is DeShone Watson. And a lot of people listening to this podcast, they are folks that, you know, they've either watched him a lot or maybe they just watched him in the last two national championship games. He's athletic. He looks like he's smart. He made a bunch of throws from the pocket. And he put up whatever he did, 40 points 2 years in a row on the closest thing that college football has to an NFL-type defense in Alabama. Did I see people that say he should be a second-round pick? What am I, and I don't study it like you guys do, but what are people missing about DeShone Watson?
It's a great question, and people don't understand that we literally pick apart these kids. And it's, you know, if you watch every throw that DeShone Watson makes over five games, you're looking at close to 300 throws and picking it apart. And you're right, he was 28-2 the last 2 years. He played in two national championship games against Alabama where he had seven touchdowns and one interception. I thought he embraced the spotlight, which is a big deal. You want that. You want a guy that embraces it. So I think he did everything he could do at the college level to put himself in the best foot going forward. Now, when you start breaking down the tape, you know, what do you see when you try to translate him to the NFL? And again, what I see is a guy that can make every throw at all three levels when that first look lines up with what he anticipated from his pre-snap look. But when he starts to have to go to progression two or three, when he starts to have to work the pocket, then I think his decision-making, his accuracy starts to break down. And that's what the NFL is all about. Every quarterback in the NFL has to learn to live within the pocket and win within the pocket. And it's a plus that he's athletic and can move around and can help get himself out of trouble. But at some point, he's got to be more consistent with his accuracy, which is always a big warning sign with NFL teams, with college quarterbacks, accuracy, because accuracy doesn't usually get much better. So can he be more consistently accurate? Can he work the pocket? Can he get the progressions two, three, and four? And can he win in the pocket? I think they're the questions that teams are asking.
Mike, I like to think of this podcast as a very pro Nate Peterman podcast. I've been kind of banging his drum now for a few months. You got to see him up close at the Senior Bowl. I know you're still going through all of these guys, but what have you seen from Peterman and how does he stack up against some of these other underclassmen that have declared for this draft in your mind?
I think when people say, okay, who's the next starting quarterback, Kirk Cousins. Who's the next Kirk Cousins? I think a lot of people want to say maybe it's Nate Peterman. Now, you know, how big is he? You know, I the same thing with Mitch Trubisky, by the way, is, you know, Trubisky's listed at 6'3", and my scouting buddies tell me he's probably 6'1 and a half. Peterman is 6'2". He looks a lot like Kirk Cousins. I was on the sidelines at the Senior Bowl with the Pitt head coach who came from Michigan State and helped coach Kirk Cousins. And he, point blank, Pat Narduzzi said, "Hey, Mike, you know, this kid is Kirk Cousins. That loves the game, can take a snapshot with his eyes. He's awesome." You know, which his coach should bang the table for him. I look at him and say he's got a pretty good arm, probably enough arm. He throws with some timing and anticipation. I like him, but I'm not going to sit. I feel like the odds are he's probably going to play in the league a lot of years. I just don't know if he's a starting quality talent or not.
And then the last guy I wanted to ask you about, Mike, is a guy that I've really just seen the highlights, but he has made some ridiculous throws, and that's Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. He looks like a big kid, looks athletic, looks like he's got a hose. What are the pros and cons of Mahomes?
He's an interesting – his tape's fun to watch. His dad was a relief pitcher in pro baseball for 10 or 11 years. And this kid had to make a baseball decision after his freshman year in college because he was a draftable baseball player. But more than any other quarterback in this draft, I think he relies on his gut feel, and he relies more on less on what, how the offense is structured and more on just going and making plays. And he throws from every platform, sidearm, over top, three quarter. You know, it seems like he makes plays where he sees things all over the field and just has a lot of fun. Now, there's very little structure to his game, and you can put his Iowa State tape on and go, what the heck is that? They were down 35-3 at half, and he struggled. His offensive line struggled. So there's some good tape on him. There's some bad tape on him. But the bottom line is he's a lot of fun to watch, and I think – he's got a great gut feel for the game. He's a gunslinger who just wants to go out and make plays.
Mike, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, you look at your Twitter account, at Mike Mayock on Twitter, and I could tell yesterday you were kind of going through your offensive tackles, I guess, preparing for the combine. And I saw you tweet a few shots out of Garrett Bowles, the underclassman from Utah, 6'5", 300 pounds. What did you see from Bowles, and how do you think he projects best to the NFL?
He's got great feet. Kid went had a bunch of off-the-field issues growing up, got his life together. He's a good story. Like Ryan Ramczyk, though, he's a one-year starter in Division I college football. It's amazing how good the two of them are, given their minimal background in Division I. But Bowles, I think, has outstanding feet, and he'll get stronger. And with an NFL nutrition and weight training program, because he's never really been involved with that until the last year or so. He's got some mechanical issues on pass protection, but again, you know, he keeps his hands low and wide. But once he gets moving with an NFL program, I think he's a starting left tackle in the league. And I think because this tackle class is so bad, I think Bowles, Ramczyk, and Cam Robinson from Alabama, you know, they're the perceived three top tackles, and they could go pretty high.
Mike, really, really appreciate the time, as always. This is your time of year, and it's much appreciated that you come on and give us a little bit of knowledge. Thank you so much.
Hey, I love doing it. Good talking to you guys.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
The email address, ross@rostucker.com. And really, if you're emailing for a question on the College Draft Podcast, the odds are you're really emailing Fran, because Fran is the guru, the expert. I will start to dive into these offensive linemen, and I am very much looking forward to that. I enjoy that. I want to make sure I can go toe-to-toe with my opinion with Fran when we get to the big boys. But we have an email question from Roland. And remember, those of you that listen to the other podcasts, like the Fantasy Feast, Even Money, Ross Tucker Football Podcast, you know that if you take advantage of any of our sponsors, like, you know, even the Amazon banner ad, over at rostucker.com and send in a question, I guarantee we will read and respond to it. Plus, I know a lot of you have enjoyed having the chance to be signing up for tuckheads.com and interacting with Fran, who's awesome on tuckheads.com. So if you haven't done that yet, go to tuckheads.com so you can interact with the guru, Fran. Here's a question from Roland. He used the Amazon ad, Amazon banner ad, to buy a copy of Cell Workout, an exercise book developed by a former inmate. Anyway, he's got a repeat question. You think he was the first person to request a question on the College Draft podcast? I asked you and Fran your opinion of Baker Mayfield. This was four games into his first season with Oklahoma. For some reason, Fran spoke instead about Paxton Lynch, and you had only seen his dance moves. Before the college season, Fran described him as, at best, a Case Keenum or 2.5 Daddy Soda prospect. Has your opinion changed at all following his efficiency record-setting season in 2016, Fran? So Mayfield not eligible. He went back to school. So you haven't really studied him, I'm guessing, Fran. But based on what you've seen on TV, have you changed your opinion about him at all?
Yeah, the film that I've studied up to this point on Mayfield is still goes back to 2015. But that being said, he comes from an offense, okay, in the air raid through the offensive coordinator there at Oklahoma is Lincoln Riley, right, who's a disciple of Mike Leach and eventually Hal Mumme and all these guys coming down and teaching the air raid offense. And it's a very, very interesting thing, Roland, that you talk about a guy that has great production at the college level, and we've seen it so many times with some really great college players that put up outstanding numbers at the college level that don't project well to the NFL because of what they're asked to do in college. I'm actually planning on doing a really lengthy piece about the air raid and just the transition that quarterbacks have to make when they play in that system in college and go to the NFL. Because honestly, when you look at that system and quarterbacks that come out of it, it's like a who's who of draft busts at the quarterback position. You're talking about guys like Tim Couch and Geno Smith and Brandon Whedon and Johnny Manziel. The list goes on and on and on. And ironically, the best player to come from that really has turned into anything at the college level or at the pro level was Case Keenum. And that's who Mayfield actually kind of reminds me of physically. I do love the fact that Mayfield twice walked onto a team in the Big 12 and became a starting quarterback. He did it first at Texas Tech under Leach, and then he did it again at Oklahoma. So I do like that. I do appreciate that. But the physical standpoint, I think he leaves a little bit to be desired there from an arm strength standpoint, from a consistent accuracy standpoint, and then also just what he's asked to do mentally. You know, he's just not a guy right now that is reading defenses at an NFL level. He's not eliminating as quickly as he should. He's not anticipating things as quickly as he'd want. So I'm excited to watch more from him, but I'm not expecting too much to change. We'll see, but I'm not expecting too much to change once I get to him later this summer.
I am expecting this podcast to be awesome moving forward because it is awesome. This is Fran's time to shine. This time is your night, bro. It's your night, bro. You can follow Fran on Twitter at FDuffy3 like I do. You can follow me if you want, at Ross Tucker NFL. You can also always catch Fran on his Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast every week, talking not just Eagles, but about the game of football from the All-22. Next week's show, Fran, we're going to start to dive into it. What do we got next week?
Well, we talked about it a little bit this week with Mike, but I think we'll dive really deep into these quarterbacks, and I'll give you my thoughts and guys. We'll have another guest on to talk about these quarterbacks, so I plan on really diving into this signal caller group and get someone's thoughts on that.
Should be awesome. For right now, though, the keg is kicked and we're all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft. Chugga, 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 chugga. Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
The Forbes interview from Podcast One just launched with the king of podcasting, Adam Carolla. On February 1st, we're dropping a new show. It's called Forbes Under 30, where we talk to young entrepreneurs, hosted by me, Steve Goldblum.
It's interesting because when you're a creator, that never leaves you. You always have this urge to want to create. Like, it's just who you are. You like the girl from Wreck-It Ralph. She knew she was a driver the whole time.
That's Martellus Bennett, one of our first guests. Who knew this NFL star was also an artist? He's that and much more. Subscribe to Under 30 on iTunes now, and be sure to give us a rating and a review.